Welcome to Outlander with Friends podcast, where we talk about our favorite Outlander episodes, favorite whiskeys, and all the other bits that nobody wants to talk about.
This podcast is not for the faint of heart, so if you've read about it or watched it, we're going to talk about it.
Clutch your pearls and pour a dram. It's time for Outlander with Friends.
But I love it so much. Love you so much.
I know.
We'll see what happens.
Welcome.
Welcome back. Unfortunately, Meg is still out there on vacation, living her best life.
She's living my best life.
I know, right? I can't even go on vacation until like next year. Well, actually, next year. Well, because I have a lot of trips lined up. Like at the end of the month, we're going to Kentucky for the Bourbon Ball. And then I'm going to hang out in the Midwest doing things this late summer. Mm-hmm. And then my sister and I are going on a cruise in, I think, October or November.
Ooh,
so
nice.
And then I plan on surprising my husband and taking him to one of his bucket list locations for Christmas. So wonderful. That's not a vacation. A vacation for me is like,
he listens to
one time he might decide to listen again. And this would be the episode that he listens to.
And it would
to,
be so. This episode. It would be.
So I can't divulge that. But yeah, so vacation for me is going by myself. And since I have to go to these places and spend time with other people, it's not quite a vacation. So, but that's neither
traveling.
Here nor there.
That's
just traveling.
Traveling versus vacation.
Right. So I said last episode that I was saving myself for the bourbon ball. And we all know how long that lasted. And then I thought about it. I was like, you know what, Terry, you're right. I need to build up my tolerance. But to be fair, I
Thank
drank
you.
A lot the last time. And so that was the reason why I was so intoxicated. But I'm going to have Woodinville straight bourbon whiskey, pot distilled at 90 proof.
Oh, I want to try Woodinville.
Yeah, so it's from Washington State. I had this, like if you look on the side here, you'll see there's a one. It was a blind tasting.
Oh, a tasting.
And I'm almost, And so I got the bottle because I think I've told you this before. One of my coworkers, he has the best bourbon and whiskey collection, but he does not drink. I don't understand it. So what he does is he'll have like a tasting and he'll get all of us to taste his whiskeys. And then he decides then which ones will, you know, get the top shelf treatment versus on the floor. But I think the reason why I have this one is because it tasted like shit. Because all the ones that tasted bad, tasted badly, he gave them away. And yeah. So we're about to find out if this is the one that he discarded or I just got it by chance. I don't know.
So his kink is watching. And getting people's reactions.
Definitely. Oh, it smells like it's going to burn going down. That's what it smells like.
I've heard really good things about Woodinville.
What are you having?
I am following the lead of one Sam Roland Hewen, and I'm having a gin and tonic today.
What kind of gin are you using?
I'm using Empress Indigo Gin.
That's
1908.
A good one. Oh, that's
it is
one.
So good. Oh man. The
lady, you could drink that.
The fragrance on the nose of this is so floral, which scared me a little bit because of your experience with Hendrix Flora Adora, but it is so delicious. And
what's your tonic?
My tonic is just a no-name diet tonic right now. I wanted to be able to taste.
Girl, you should definitely try the elderberry.
Elderflower? I know. I have some elderflower.
Elderflower, yeah.
I have some elderflower, but I wanted to be able to taste all the notes that are in this gin. And at, like what I was going to start to say, although it smells like flowers, on the palate, what I'm getting is blueberries, which is fascinating. So, and I haven't done any research. Tonic. I don't know what has really gone into it, but it's so good. I'm definitely going to finish this one and probably pour another one, which I will use the elderflower tonic. I promise.
I will say that after the bourbon ball, I'm going to switch to a lighter drink. So once season 7 starts, I'll mostly be having different gins. I have to switch once I get into the summer months because, quite frankly, for me, unless you're drinking a highball, whiskey is not it during the summer, especially here because it's too hot for that.
I hear you.
It's not refreshing enough.
100%. Like,
this Woodinville is really good, but it's definitely leaving its mark on my chest.
On the inside?
I'm over here sweating. My goodness. It's hot. Turn the fan on real quick.
Hey, am I ordering some Sassenach Wild Scottish Gin for you? Because apparently I am part of the smuggling chain now. I've already got 3 people down for it.
Yeah, I still have a bottle of tequila sitting in California I need to grab. But yes, if you could, that'd be great. I went on Reserve Bar and I tried to do the
pre-order. If I could what? I'm not doing anything illegal. Nothing whatsoever.
No, you're not. You're just going to leave it in your car and I'm going to come and get it. Yeah, I went on Reserve Bar and I put in my address and they were like, you can't have any. So
yeah, Tennessee and Pennsylvania and Ohio and North Carolina so far is where nothing's going to happen whatsoever with the extra bottles that I ordered.
Actually, you know what I just thought of?
What's that?
I have an address in Florida. I can get it shipped there. I forgot. I have an apartment there. So yeah, I can do that.
You might be able to go to Total Wine in Florida and pick some up for all we know.
Well, if it's out there, I think I'll do that. And it's very affordable. It's like $40.
Yeah. That's
so I'm happy about that.
That's very like comparable to other.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. We're not going to talk about how much I've spent.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Season 6, Episode 2, Allegiance.
Down to the wire we are getting to. I can't even.
I know.
How soon this.
We have, 5 days? No.
9 days.
I keep thinking
of 12. FOMO so bad. The only thing that is getting me through the FOMO of the fact that I am not in New York for the premiere is the air quality in New York. And I feel bad.
Y'all can have that.
Who's there. I hope they have a wonderful time, but I am clinging to that. Those pictures of the orange, smoky New York skyline to get me through the fact that I'm not there. Okay, I had to get that off my chest. Damn it.
I know. And you know, it's horrible because like I saw those pictures and I immediately remembered the moment I jumped off the plane in Dhaka, Bangladesh. And that's exactly what it looked like. And I was like, is there like a fire somewhere? And they're like, no, it's like this all the time. So when I lived there, our ambassador told us that every 30 days they gave us a Liberty Pass or whatever, so we could leave the country and come back because it was so bad. You had to wear a mask all the time.
Clear your lungs out a little
bit. I will live vicariously through all of our friends that get an opportunity to be up there, but I do not envy you at all.
Everybody's going to have to take a shower before they go to bed so that their hair doesn't stink like smoke on the pillow.
Maybe if they wore like a trash bag.
Past that.
Like what? Like, you know how people wore those trash bags? No, listen, because I mean, I don't know if they're going to get an opportunity. You remember because like when we went to the premiere last year,
there's a fashion statement, a whole bunch of people. I know, right?
But like if you get an opportunity to meet any of the stars, like you don't want to be all smoky and gross. So like I would put on a trash bag and the moment I saw Katrina, I'd rip it off, probably get tackled by security. But hey, girl. And I only say that because
she's reaching. She's reaching.
Somebody clotheslines me. DDT. I was just taking off a trash bag. I didn't want to be gross trying to get a hug. But yes, because like last year, oh my gosh, we went to the premiere in California.
Or Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. That sounds better. I told you my recall is shit. So anyways, Rima and Jill literally were like, they were standing on the other side of the gate by the entrance. Like we were in like the VIP area where we paid to go and sit closer to the panel. But Katrina's vehicle literally pulled up next to her and like she jumped out and the first person she saw was Rima and Jill and they got a huge hug and selfie. And I was like, good for them. But if that is New York, you don't want to be gross and smoky and nasty. So you put on your trash bag. And right. When you see them, you rip it off and you go in for the hug. That's how I envision it happening. It might happen a little different.
You heard it here first, folks.
This is how you got to do it. And you have to be very vocal when you do it. Otherwise, you will get tackled. So I just want to make sure people understand that part too.
I'm going to have that image in my head for a while.
I'm just imagining these things. I know me, and I've said this before. I don't go to events where I may have close contact with the stars. Because if I see Graham, it's going to be, I don't know.
Famous last words.
I know, right? I try to play these scenarios out in my head. So when I meet him, finally, hopefully the best scenario happens and not the worst ones that I think of. You know what I mean? Like I pee on myself or I throw up or I pass oh my out. God. Girl, I feel like that's what's going to happen. I'm going to see him and I'm immediately start peeing. And I've had dreams of doing this. And I'm like, why must you lose all of your faculties every time you think of this man? Well, I don't know. So I'm hoping the best case scenario happens and I'm just like super cool, super chill. And then we become best friends forever and we get matching tattoos. The end.
And they live happily ever after. Well, cheers to that.
Maybe Men in Kilts 3 will feature me as the third wheel.
In North Carolina.
I know, right? I'll be the third wheel. Like literally, I'm going to wrap myself around the axle and not let go. They're like, get this woman off the van. Spray me with one of those little bottles that they use on cats. Just sitting there like, oh, yeah.
Claire should have invented that.
That would have been awesome.
Claire should have invented that for ADSO.
For ADSO, yeah. We still have time. You never know what's going to happen in season 8 or season 7.
Who knows? The title card. ADSO's right there. In the opening.
I haven't looked at them yet. I've seen the posts. I just haven't read them.
No, not for 7. No, for episode 602.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You're right. He's sitting right there on Major McDonald's red coat.
Yeah, when it first.
I'm kind of bummed that they never had him like snag the wig and play with it because that would have been hilarious.
That would have been awesome. This ADSO is very much, he's a very docile cat compared to the one in the book.
Right.
The one in the book gives absolutely no fucks. Neither does the white sow. Like, where is the white sow at? I just feel like for a little bit of comic relief, like these last couple of seasons have been deep. Let's throw in a white sow that's tearing up some shit. That'd be cool.
I have it written down from this episode. I forgot about the moments of lightheartedness. This episode has light humor and dark humor and naughty humor. And I'm here for it. I love this. Yeah, it's all there.
They definitely
try. I know
tried.
Overall the whole season is very dark and serious, but this is a great episode for like, wait a minute. Oh my God, they did.
Yeah, they did. They went there. Yeah. So just so we can, you know, move right along into it.
Yep.
After my first note, obviously, is going to be Jamie and Ian at the Cherokee Village. So hear me out. I did not feel that Jamie, he didn't really look like he was distraught that there were two women in his bed. I know that.
Right.
I mean, because Jamie is the type of person. Let me just say this. I get for the time period that this isn't something that I should like clasp my righteousness and with both hands and blush. But do you remember like in France when he was at that brothel?
Yeah.
He was like, you know, well, she tried to peel the banana, but I only let her pluck the grapes. You know, that's why I've got these bruises.
What the hell?
Like, no harm, no foul, right? Because he's like, she wanted a 69, but I was like, no, we can 68. Like, what? But the only reason why I clocked it was because Jamie, in every other episode, would never be snuck up on like that. Like, never. Nobody sneaks up on Jamie.
Right.
And you mean to tell me you didn't feel two women climbing in your bed? Get the fuck out of here, Jamie.
I have to agree. And, you know, if you really want to take things way too seriously, which we never do. I know we're going to get into the ether sooner or later. Does Jamie have some kind of narcolepsy disorder this season? Because the man lets his wife go downstairs when she's still traumatized after her sexual assault, and he does not figure out for, like, what, 18 months that she's huffing ether? She's climbing out of the bed with him, and he's just snoozing away. And that is not James Alexander Malcolm Mackenzie Fraser.
It's not. And it's not. And that's what I'm like. Something is
happening. And it is clear right here. It's clear right here with the two Native women that sneak into his bed. He could have had bigger reactions. I mean, I love Jamie.
I know. That's what I mean. It's like,
but she's like reaching down and figuring out that he's got a nice.
She's like, oh, dude,
he would have slapped that away. Jamie would have slapped that shit away.
Lady, I'm telling you, you're preaching to the choir. I was sitting here looking at this shit like, Jamie, you dirty bitch. You know good and well. He didn't even flinch. Girl, he didn't even flinch. He was like, oh, Ian, there are two women in my bed. He didn't even get them off of
him. Yeah, that
he
was just like, way too
hey,
calm.
Hey, Ian, there are two women in my bed.
If you're not too sleepy over there, maybe you could have a little conversation.
Meanwhile, they're still like grabbing and snatching on him. And he's just like, I felt like he wasn't pushing away too much. He was just like, stop it. Girl, stop it. You know, like, stop it, but they're pushing your head down kind of shit. Like, lay your head on my lap. Like, what? Who do you think you're fooling, man? I was like, come on, Jamie. This is not the Jamie we know. What was that chick's name that was the pie lady? He wasn't even entertaining that shit. She was like, yeah, he's not here.
Exactly.
But
he had a little smirk and like, he was like, yeah, I know
smirk,
I'm hot,
but he was like, no, man, my wife happened. Is around the corner. That bitch will knock me out.
Exactly. Yes.
That's what I'm like. Yes. That's my take on that part.
Okay. And then
I'm gonna leave him alone.
We're gonna come back to like, well, no, I'll hit it right now. You'd be advised to stifle your glee. That was so hilarious. I sat and I giggled listening to that. He's telling Ian, and Ian's giggle is so great. Just
I
so
also
perfect.
So when I watched this episode again, I thought that Ian left with them. Because you know it's been a while since I've like rewatched any of these episodes, and I thought Ian left with him. I was like, I know the fuck he didn't just leave because he had a smirk on his face and he was gone. And I was like, oh, shit. Look at little Ian.
I thought Ian walked over to start talking to them and I thought he didn't have pants on.
I did, too.
And then all of a sudden he gets up and like walks them out of the tent to close the flap behind them. And he's got pants on. I'm like, wait a minute. He didn't have pants on before.
He didn't have. He could have slid them bad boys on once he realized he wasn't going for a 2-for-1.
All right.
Damn it, Ian.
So we're in agreement. We don't like Jamie's lackluster fighting off of the Native women. But we'll let that go.
I don't even really think he fought him off. He was just like.
Exactly.
One thing about Ian, though, we are under the impression that he doesn't know Cherokee, but he speaks Mohawk. He had a lot to say in Cherokee for a guy that doesn't speak the language. I'm like, how the fuck did you get all that out? And you don't know Cherokee. Like, what? He's like, oh, by the way, you owe them some guns or your dick. Take your pick.
They're packing either way. So.
Like, thanks a lot, Ian. That sounds like something I would do. I'm like, hey, I smooth the situation over, but you do realize you're going to have to put out or bring some guns. Like, that's your two options here. I'm not a good negotiator. I don't know what I'm doing. I was just trying to make it stop.
Colonel Fraser, I'm sorry. You're going to have to put out. That's all there is to it.
I mean, how do you explain that to Claire? I'm like, I'm trying to save us all. I had to put out because I didn't have any guns.
It's kind of her fault because, like, he knows what's going to happen in the future because she's the one who told him. So he's just trying to prevent the revolution or get the Cherokee on the right side. Never mind.
I will tell you that this scene afterwards, when they're talking to the chief and he asked for the guns, I wondered for a moment why they chose, and I say they, I mean like the showrunners and Diana chose not to use that as an opportunity for them to change the course of Native American history. So I had to go look it up.
Right.
And there was like a confederation, right? That I think it was like the Iroquois Confederation that had six tribes. And they end up splitting up anyway. And the Cherokee fought for the British. So that's why they did it. It made sense.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. A little touch of history thrown in there.
Yeah. So the hardest part about like, and I'm paraphrasing and I'm pulling from like different parts of my brain that may or may not have it all together, but there was a no-win situation in this. And I think that after Claire had told Jamie what was going to go down, I think that's the real reason why he was torn. And I felt like they tried to explain it, but I was kind of lost in the conversation. So the largest confederation of Native Americans on the east side of the treaty line, which I think at the time was like the Appalachian Mountains, maybe the Mississippi. I don't know if they actually made it that far, but those six tribes were like, I mean, they were almost a million deep. I think they were like between 500,000 and 800,000. So if they were able to prevent settlers from moving past the Appalachian Mountains, I think that they would have been able to preserve a lot of their way of life because they hadn't quite got past the Mississippi to where the Plains Indians were. So they would still have that large swath of land between the Appalachian Mountains and the Mississippi River. But Joseph Brant, which we'll probably hear about in this season coming up, or maybe season 8, he was like very instrumental. But like the thing is, they kind of figured out at some point, they're like, well, if we help the British, they will stop people from going further into Native American territory. But if we help the Americans,
that makes a lot of sense.
They didn't have like too many options because they're like, well, if we fight with the Americans, the Americans or the colonies, I don't know what they called themselves before they said Americans, so I'm just going to say Americans. They were living pretty peacefully. I don't want to call them colonizers, but that's essentially what they were. But for the most part, they didn't have a lot of issues. I wouldn't say a lot, but they did have their issues. But they got to the point where they could live pretty peacefully. It was the new immigrants coming in that were pushing past the settlement, like the line where they were not supposed to cross.
Gotcha.
They had a really good relationship. I wouldn't say a really good relationship, but they had a peaceful relationship with the settlers already. And what they were trying to get the British to do is to stop the new migrants from pushing further west. And they were doing a really good job of it, like for a long time, up until like 1776 or something like that, right before the Declaration of Independence was published. It sucked because I think that's why Jamie was struggling. If Claire gave him like the whole entire history lesson, he's like, damn, either way, they're fucked. If they fight with the Americans, the British, who once were their allies, they're going to leave. And all of these migrants that were pushing past the settlement line are going to do it, which is what happened. They lost the war, obviously, and the Brits just left them hanging. All the ones that fought with them, they left them hanging. They're like, sorry, we're taking our shit and we're leaving. And so henceforth, that's how all this other shit happened. But yeah, I think that's why like I felt like Jamie was struggling with it. And I thought it was because he had to make a decision. When am I going to switch sides? Should I give these guys guns and take the risk of them fighting against me? I mean, that was the explanation that was given. But I kind of like, after I did my research, I'm like, I'm going to assume he knew these things and that's why he did it. Because it seems a little selfish.
Plus, if they had succeeded in the Cherokee helping the British and winning, then we would never get my spinoff series with Elsa from 1883 and Marsali being vigilantes.
Absolutely not.
In the frontier.
Exactly.
And we
absolutely
can't have that.
And I'm pretty sure he knew that. He was like, somewhere in the fiction future, there's this woman that requires me.
There's a fanfic to be written. Somebody, there we go. I need a fanfic author.
Have you ever actually read the Declaration of Independence?
No.
Okay.
I have read the Constitution because I had to memorize like the first three articles of it.
All right. So check this out. Before. I'm going to nerd out real quick and tell you what it says. And it's going to be really quick. So the Declaration of Independence, right? I read it and basically it just talks shit about the king. That's all it says. It's like, you said you would do this and you didn't. You said you would do that and you didn't. You failed at doing this. You sucked at doing that. And because of all these things, we're fucking out. And when I say we're out, you're out too. We're going to start our own shit. And then everybody signed it.
Boom. Mic drop.
And I want to say, have you ever watched that show, Bridgerton?
I watched the first season of Bridgerton. And then on principle, there were just too many people who were like, oh my God, it's so wonderful. And I'm like, have you seen Outlander? And they're like, no. So on principle, I will not watch any more Bridgerton. I know they're two different things. Don't at me. They aren't comparable, but Outlander is superior in every way. That's all. Off my soapbox.
I will tell you that you listeners out there, don't listen to Terry. You can watch both and enjoy them both. But the new one that just came out, it's called Queen Charlotte.
Queen Charlotte.
And I want to make sure that I don't get this wrong, so I may have to actually Google this while we're sitting here. But her husband, King George, I think is the same guy that was around when this revolution was happening. Mad King George. And I thought about it when I was reading the Declaration. And I was like, you know what? This guy was at the height of his, I think they said he had bipolarism or some sort of like, I forget the mental disorder or condition that he had, but you know, he actually went mad. And during this time when it was getting like really, really bad is about the time that the colonies were rebelling against the crown. And I was like, well, if you guys had known that, maybe, I mean, I'm not going to say I don't appreciate the fact that America's here, but the circumstances played out pretty nicely, right? For this to happen, because you got Mad King George over there losing his shit. And he really has no idea what's happening in the colonies because he's hired all of these different governors and sheriffs and other legislative bodies to like handle what's going on over in the colonies. Mm-hmm. And they know that this man is out of his mind. So they're not telling him everything that's going on. They're waging war on his behalf without him really having full understanding of what's happening. Because I want to say that he was kind of credited with losing the colonies because of his condition. So all these things kind of like played out perfectly. Like either way, this was going to happen, but they did pick an opportune time to do it because, well, one, he didn't have any command control over the colonies because he was, you know, what do they call it? I wouldn't say he's dislocated, but he wasn't there.
Okay.
And then he was going through that mental health issue. So I was like, well, look at you guys taking advantage of a historic moment, starting your own country.
That is super interesting.
Go Rebels.
I have a book that is called The First Civil War, and it's referring to the Revolutionary War. I haven't read the book because that's something that I do. I buy interesting looking books and add them to the pile on my nightstand to my to be read list. And
girl, you gotta dig into it.
Well, you know, if I could ever stop reading Outlander and rereading Outlander and listening to Outlander audiobooks.
Oh, it's so good though.
I know.
So good.
All right. I'll think about it.
Can we talk about old Granny Wilson's ass coming back from the dead?
No. Yes, we will, but not right now. We have to talk about how I'm going like leap backwards. We both agreed we were unhappy with Jamie's attempt, quote unquote, attempt at fighting off the Native women. I am also unhappy with Jamie's return home to Claire.
I don't like it.
What in the fucking intimacy like coordinator it. Was that bullshit? I know she's pregnant.
I feel like...
But for fuck's sake, that was terrible. That was, oh, just to be sure, why don't you tell me what you have in mind? Oh, for fuck's sake, he was going to ravish you. Come on. You're going to stop and ask him to...
I don't know. Like, I felt like that whole scene was just not even necessary.
I know. He's like racing over the rise on the horse. And you could tell by the way he brought that horse into the stable, like he didn't even break down the tack and hang up the saddle and wipe down the horse. He was so ready to
get
in there.
That horse is running wild in the front yard.
And she's like, hang on, just so I'm sure what you have in mind here. And he's like flinging the coat. He's like flinging the shirt and he's reaching. And she's like, no, I need an explanation. Come the fuck on.
I'm not, come on, girl. There's a wild horse running around the yard. You know what this man is up here for. Stop playing. He wouldn't even have to ask me any questions. He busts that door open. I'm naked. It's like the door swung open and knocked my clothes off.
But
no questions asked.
I did appreciate the parallel, the echo of Mrs. Bug down in the kitchen looking up at the ceiling exactly the way, was it Mrs. Baird?
Nosy ass?
Yes. Yes. I did appreciate that.
Like, she knows the difference between jumping on the bed and humping on the bed. You saw the difference in her face, though, when she was like, oh, why are they jumping on the bed?
That is,
and then later
way
on, she's like,
too
oh,
long to be a hashtag, but holy shit, hashtag jumping on the bed versus humping on the bed.
No, jumping and not humping. Oh, Claire, I love you so much.
All right, Granny Wilson's funeral. I'm ready to tackle that now.
Lady, let me just tell you, I went into a whole tirade in my mind about this when I saw that episode. So I have to tell you this story.
I'm just going to say that was the dark humor that I was talking about. So there was the lighthearted, there was
yes,
the naughty
yes.
humor.
This was
this
a great
is the
scene.
Dark humor, and I'm here for it.
First of all, ain't no damn way. I felt like everybody was a little too calm during that whole ordeal. Even Tom Christie was like, what the fuck? But they were way too calm. So let me tell you this story. I remember when the first time my friend invited me to church with him, and he didn't tell me that they spoke in tongues. Now, before I go into this, I'm not knocking anybody's religion. I'm just telling you my experience as to what happened.
That
right?
would be a good heads so anyways, up to give somebody.
As a guest, they make you sit up front and then, you know, so people can like see you and come and greet you, which I don't know why people think that the first thing you want to do as a new person in a new environment like that would want to be up front and center. But anyways, I digress. So I was sitting next to this older lady and she was in a wheelchair and they start singing and I'm like getting into it. Like they were really vibrant because I didn't grow up going to churches like that. It was very much like sit up. You stand up, you sit down, you pray, you stand up, you sit up. I went to a Catholic church and then I went to a Lutheran church.
Okay.
They were very docile. There was no hooping and hollering, but this is like the South. I didn't know that in the South, they really get into church. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there was like people swaying and this lady was in the back and she was like wailing and it got like super intense. Girl, the next thing you know, this lady next to me shoots up and starts like speaking in tongues, right? Lady, let me tell you, when I say I peed everywhere, there was not a dry seat in the pew.
What?
I have never been so terrified in my fucking life. Girl, I got up and ran through the fucking church all the way to the back door into the parking lot. The only reason why I didn't leave is because I rode with him there. And I'm like, what, baby? Let me tell you. I was gone. I ain't have no pew. Shoes or nothing on Jesus. I left. I took off running. And that's why I was wondering why old Granny Wilson's ass pops up out of nowhere and everybody's like, I mean, they just look shocked, but like nobody took off running, jumped out a fucking window. Like that was completely normal for them. I would have slipped right into a coma on the spot, done. There is no fucking way I would have been as chill as these people in that church. Ain't no damn way. And I felt bad for my friend because he comes outside after like 10 minutes. And he's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm covered in piss. No, I'm not okay. What the fuck was that?
Oh my God. How old were you in this situation?
And I'm telling the world this because I don't fucking care, man. That shit happened and it was scary as fuck.
How old were you?
And I can appreciate now what it's about, but I didn't know then. I was like, you could have warned me. And that's why I just didn't understand the reaction these people had in that church. I'm like,
roughly what year was this?
Oh my God. I was probably like a junior in high school. So it's over 20 years ago.
Okay. All right.
I was probably like a junior or a sophomore in high school.
Holy cow.
Oh, this wasn't recently. I haven't peed on myself in a very long time.
A really fantastic story. I don't even know if I can top that with anything that's ever happened in my life.
Oh my God. He doesn't listen to shows like this, but I swear if he ever did, he would know. He's like, oh yeah, I remember that. She peed all over the pew.
I'm going to track
peed
him down.
The old lady as
and
I jumped
I'm
over
send
her.
Him this audio clip. Absolutely. That is the mission for this weekend. I know what I'm doing this weekend.
They probably thought I had caught the Holy Spirit the way I ran out of that place, man. Girl, I was jumping over pews, all kinds of shit. I didn't care. I was like, you ain't getting me.
That is such a better story than what happened with just Mrs. Wilson talking to Hiram Crombie about how cheap he was and not paying the sin eater. I mean, that's where I was going. Like, hey, some lighthearted but dark humor. I'm not going to pay the man before he comes and eats your sins, am I? I'm not, what is this, a prepay kind of situation? Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, he was right, though. I'm like, you eat her sins and then I'll pay you. That makes sense.
Yes.
I think the book version of what happened during that event was a lot better than what they showed on the show.
Yeah, I will grant you, the whole congregation was way too calm, but Roger even was way too calm.
Yeah.
I know you've traveled through time and you've seen some shit, but what on earth?
You ain't never seen nobody raised from the dead.
What on earth prepares you for that situation to happen?
Girl, nothing.
I don't know how that congregation thought that Claire had something to do with that, because she was like 10 feet away.
That was weird.
She was 10 feet away and the woman started to sit up.
They blamed her just because she showed up to a funeral.
Come on.
And she wasn't even the person that noticed it. It was Jermaine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how y'all just blame Claire because she's standing there?
Right. Good
that
Lord.
That makes no sense.
No, not fair.
Granny decided she wasn't ready to meet the Lord and it's Claire's fault. Claire's fault. Like, what the hell? What? How the fuck is this my fault? She said she wasn't ready to leave. She wasn't ready to leave. Leave me alone. Which leads me to my next statement, and this is no segue by any stretch of the imagination, but Malva Christie is weird as fuck.
Oh,
full
dude.
Stop. Like, I love Jessica's rendition of what she felt this character would be like, because it's spot on, but she's so fucking weird, man.
Dude.
Either she has a weird kink, or she's into the voodoo. Like, there's something off about this chick. Like, from jump.
I'm calling her Maleficent from now on. She is no longer Malva Christie. She is Maleficent. She has some weird supernatural shit.
You know what? That's appropriate.
And she is. Yeah, that look in her eyes. Like, there's so many kudos to go around in this episode. Fucking Jessica Reynolds, Lauren Lyle, César Dambois. The acting is spectacular. And I'll get to the whole Lauren and Cesar
died
later.
From the church thing, because I'm not letting that shit
right.
go. But
right,
I mean, they should have. But they, I maybe in the outtakes. Maybe if we go dig down in like the archives, we can find some outtakes for somebody actually.
I
did
have
find.
The DVDs.
That would be awesome.
So I will go through the blooper reels.
You should
reels.
Go back and see if there's any behind
oh my
the
God.
Scenes.
That'd be awesome.
Where somebody was like, "Oh Lord Jesus," and they passed out. Because that would have been me. I'm telling you. Y'all could have never had me on Fraser's Ridge. I'm comic relief, but I'm for real. I'm not doing God. Any of this shit. I came from the future. I'm telling you, there's an appropriate reaction for this shit. You guys need to act accordingly. They're going to be on to us if you don't.
We need an inside source. Like one of our, we need to find a listener or recruit a listener who has the ear of the actors on the show so that we can plant these ideas in their head so they can sort of whisper it around
exactly.
and it can
like,
become
we only
a blooper
have one season
reel.
Left. We need to get on it. Yes.
Yeah, but Malva, that's.
I don't know. But yeah, so like.
Oh, man, the crazy eyes of that girl.
I think
holy
she was
shit.
The one that started the rumors about Claire.
What rumors? About her being a witch?
So
you mean amongst
yeah,
the fisher
folk? Yeah, so this
folk?
Is why I think that.
Gotcha. Ah.
The fisher folk. But I don't think she did it in a straightforward way. I think she did it in a slick way. Like, you know, people are talking about, oh, this thing happened. And she's like, you know, I heard that she had been accused of being a witch. She was on trial for it.
Just like a subversive kind of.
Yeah, because, you know, she spends a lot of time with her, so she can't really come out and say it. Because then people are like, well, why the fuck are you hanging out with her if you think that she's a witch? But she could be like, yeah, you know, word on the street is Claire's a witch. So just throwing that out there. Do with it what you will, folks. I hate her already.
Now I've got images of Maleficent stuck in my head and her taking revenge on Tom Christie
as
for
Jessica Reynolds.
Trying to whip her. Yes, as Jessica Reynolds. That'd be amazing.
Her face, though. Her face. Oh, man.
She puts her chin down like Wednesday Addams and like looks up through her upper eyelids.
I was about to say that.
Really?
And Tom Christie's like, take that look off your face or whatever. And she just kept looking. I'm like, bitch, you can't even hit me. All I'm saying is the look on her face, I would have went Mother Dearest on her ass.
The last part about the humor was Mrs. Bug loading up the wagon and worrying about Arch's gut and Kezi's nose because she packed all kinds of sausages.
Girl, stop.
For Arch to eat. I love these people and they have not gotten the storyline and the focus that they deserve and that they need for what's going to happen coming up. God, how are they going to handle the bugs in season 7?
All right, so check this out. I've got a couple of thoughts. Okay. On this little scene that you had just talked about.
Right.
First of all, where the fuck did the bugs come from? They just appeared on the ridge. And I know that we all know where they came from, but they did not even introduce these folks.
I know.
You know. They've been working there forever.
Right.
And I'm like, where the fuck did they come from? Everybody that came to the ridge got an introduction, but all of a sudden the bugs are living in the house and nobody knows why.
And not
like,
to
no,
mention-
No, honey, because they play such... They play such an important role later.
They do.
They need to have had an introduction.
And not to mention the fact that Mrs. Bug looks way too much like that other lady from the Fisher Folk who winds up denouncing Claire. I confuse those two people.
Yeah.
How, if you're not a book reader.
I thought it was her.
Yeah. How the ever-loving hell are you supposed to tell those people apart? Give me a break. You got to make them look a little bit
different.
I don't know,
but when we get to that episode, because we're going to do that episode... I got some things to say about that, but let's go back to Lizzie's little hoe ass. Let me tell you, first of all, she think her ass is slick.
Was she already
she
getting funky with both Joe and Kezi?
She was, because she was like, I'm going to miss you, but I'll keep your brother company.
I know, right?
You little hussy. And she was smirking too. And she didn't give a shit that Mr. Bug and his wife sitting there watching her be a hoe. She was like, I mean, I'm going to miss you, but
I'll keep your brother
I got your
in
brother
line
here to keep me company until you come back. I bet you will. I'm like, Liz, look at your ass, girl.
You keep
him- Where is your pappy at? Somebody need to get this girl. She don't give a shit. She's like, I'll see you when you get back. I ain't going to miss you too bad because, you know, you got a twin. I love her audacity.
God.
I love it. And I hope Fantastic. They give her all of the parts that are Lizzie from the book in this next season, because that shit was hilarious. We need it. We deserve it. If she doesn't, I'm going to be upset, because that saga was absolutely what the doctor ordered. That little thruple. Oh my God. That was my favorite part of the book. I read that shit like 6 times.
I want to know how many Outlander readers out there discovered the concept of a thruple for the first time. Because I'm picturing most Outlander readers started around the early 90s. Probably not too hip to the polyamory scene, shall we say. The kink world. Are there people out there? And not even to mention Lord John coming into the mix at the second half of season 7.
I love it. I love it.
Okay, that was a tangent.
Oh, I love it. This is going to be great. I know, right? So, just out of curiosity, I wanted to ask you this question earlier.
No, I've never had a
Why
threesome.
Why do you think...
I'm not closing off the possibility, but I have not.
That was my next question. Thank you for answering it for me. And everybody that has listened and will listen to this show, Terry has not, but she is open to, matter of fact, we're holding auditions and interviews. So look out for that link in our bio and in our stories for an announcement. You might want to let Tim know.
Remind me to tag Sam and David Barry.
Just in case you guys were wondering, I'm down to clown. Damn, Terry, I was just going to ask you about Marcelly and Fergus, but we can go here.
Oh, no, I think we went far enough.
What kind of, have you made another drink?
No, and I'm thinking about taking
a
brief
gin?
Little break and making another drink just because I need some more ice.
Well, I will tell you, gin will make you sin, so
Ooh.
Make sure you have that when you do your auditions for this thruplesome.
I'll be right back.
Do, 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 do.
All right, I'm back. You may continue down your Fergus and Marcelly road.
the question that I wanted to ask before you told us about your desire to knock off another thing on your bucket list. I was wondering why they decided to give Marcelly and Fergus some drama. They've been in the peripheral for the most part, lending support where needed, but all of a sudden they're like, we need someone else to suffer. We fucked with the Frasers a bit too much, so let's go after poor Frasalli. What the fuck did they do to y'all? Like, they were just minding their business. Why all of a sudden y'all want to give them drama? I know, like, in the book, if I recall, Fergus kind of struggled with what happened, you know, but he didn't turn into, like, a raging alcoholic. I mean, damn, he already had his hand chopped off, and Marsali has been having babies since she left Scotland. Like, leave them alone. Why do you think they did that?
That is a really good question, because the actors are up for the drama, and I know what happens in the book. They really nailed it with the birth of this baby, and now, as far as we know, they might not even be in season 7. What in the ever-loving fuck?
Yeah.
That's crazy. How can you leave them out so much? They are not in any previews. They're not in a trailer. They don't have still photos. They might not be, they might be in the end of season, or the second half of season 7, but I don't get it.
Maybe that's what it is. But I just don't understand why they, all of a sudden, Fergus and Marsali, they left Marsali in Jamaica or wherever the fuck to have Jermaine. And then Fergus is gone for a period of time because he's going to go get Jermaine and Marsali and bring them back. And then they were in Wilmington. And like the only drama they had was like, yeah, we're going to go bust Murtaugh out of jail. And that's it. You know, and I know that as they adapt to living in the new world, Fergus has struggled because when they were still in Edinburgh, they were doing
smuggling
bad shit.
And
yeah. So I had an epiphany just then. Think that Fergus's whole life, he's kind of grown up on the fringe of being a good kid versus being a bad kid until Jenny got a hold of him. And then after Jamie got back from Hellwater, Fergus went back to him and they started going back to doing the shady shit again.
Right.
And then Claire comes back and then Jamie's like, I should probably not do shady shit anymore. So I think that maybe Fergus is struggling with being a better person.
Oh.
Because Jamie did it because of Claire. He had to. But Fergus didn't really have a reason because Marsali was, she fucking jumped on a ship, which she's like 14. Fergus is like 30. So I don't think that Marsali gave a shit whether if he was like, you know, smuggling and shit.
I have never looked at it from that perspective, but my brain went off on a tangent while you were completing your thought. Fergus struggling with being a good person. For the parts when Jamie was raising him and then when he was an adult in Edinburgh, everybody thinks that Jamie would have been such a marvelous father. Fergus is the only one that he had any part whatsoever in raising. Well, he was a groom on the estate with Willie, but Fergus,
he didn't rear him. He raised Fergus.
Yeah, he raised Fergus, and there's a lot of fucked up shit that was going on. I mean, yeah, circumstances, and Jamie had to live in a cave for 7 years on the estate of Lallybroch and shit.
But still, Fergus was like bringing him, you know.
He was picking pockets. He was smuggling booze. He was like, wait a minute, maybe Jamie's not such a great
parent. Come to think of it, Jamie probably wouldn't have been the best
parental figure. We need to reconsider that entire...
I mean, if you want to go one step further, now, everybody, leave us alone. We're just going to go down this road, okay? We're just going to go down this road. Don't come after us. We'll bring it back. This is just our what if. But think about, like, even Ian. Every time Ian ran away, he ran away to Jamie.
To Jamie.
And Jamie had him handing out seditious material. They were out there smuggling. Even with, like, he's like, oh, I think of Ian as my own son. You got him out here doing criminal activity.
Coming to his room in the brothel. Yeah.
In a whorehouse. You know what I mean? Exactly. Even when they get to America, like, I mean, I'm not saying it's his fault because shit happens, but Ian is like rolling dice and gambling and shit. I don't know, man.
Somebody
know that Jamie
called CPS on Jamif many, many years ago. Honestly, that was not a secure and safe situation for a youngster to be raised in.
He's not a good dad, man.
Wow.
He loves his adoptive children and his other kids. But you know, his other two kids, his blood kids, they did really well, but they were with their moms.
They were being raised
by somebody else.
And even his stepkids, he was only around for like a couple of months, reading them stories from the Bible as bedtime stories. And then he split.
He was only there for what, 8 months, 9 months, but lickety split, he gone.
And then his 15-year-old stepdaughter married a 31-year-old man.
Jumps on a ship. It was like, bye, Felicia, I'm out. All I'm saying is we might have to relook.
Wow.
We might have to take another look at this guy. Now, everybody calm down. We're just conjecture. I can tell people get mad right now. Like,
I can
how
hear
dare
it.
You say these
I
things?
I can like, hear it through it Spotify. I can hear it through Apple Podcasts right now.
I know, right? But like, let's look at it for what it is. Like, think about this, though. If this were not Jamie and this was like actual people that we knew, we would say this like, yo, he's a piece of shit dad, man. He's got his kids doing criminal activity that'll get them life in prison or hung.
That's right.
Or I guess the electric chair, but still, he was not a good father figure. I mean, he said there is honor among thieves. I guess that's cool, but yeah. I can't think of anything that I would say to him if he were my baby daddy.
Ooh,
actually, wow. I would forgive him anything if he was my baby daddy. That's why he got away with that shit. That was my question, but now that we went down that tangent.
Famous last words.
But
downfall of many a good woman.
And then my last comment about Fergus and Missali was obviously the birth of their child.
Yes.
And not all the other drama that happened afterwards. I just want to know why they thought it was necessary for us to watch them hump before the baby was born. Like that whole scene was just weird to me. It was uncomfortable. I know Fergus grew up in a brothel, and I say grow up, like, I think he started understanding shit around 5 or 6, and he was only there until he was about 10.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So at best, he had 4 years. How the fuck did he know that you're supposed to have sex while you're pregnant and suck on some titties? How does he know that? I feel like that was irrelevant information, and we didn't have to watch them do that. Because I feel like Fergus and Marsali and Roger.
He was not
and,
protected from anything when he was living in the brothel. That kid grew up.
And I get
so
that,
early.
But I also feel like he was kind of too young to know.
Well,
that.
He was, but
or at least
the
remember
situation
it.
That he was living in, there was no avoiding it.
Yeah, but like, let's say he learned that between the ages of like, let's say at the age of understanding. Let's just say it was like 5 or 6. And he was there for like 3 years until Jamie met him. How much of that information do you think that you would retain at like 35, which is what he is now having this baby, 35 or 36? Mm. Like, I don't remember shit that I did in kindergarten. That's why I felt like it was just a weird scene.
No, but if he basically lived in the brothel.
I don't know.
So that was all that he knew was that sort of situation. Where I was going with it was people give some maybe deserved, but they give a lot of guff to Diana about all the sexual trauma and all the trauma period that she puts her characters through. I don't really read a lot of stuff that talks about how she had Fergus raised in a brothel. I guess maybe it's because it doesn't go in depth, but if you really stop to ponder it, which I have done over the last 10 minutes or so, so obviously I'm an expert on this. Like, that's some really fucked up childhood memories and ideation.
Didn't Diana say that she didn't like writing about kids?
Well, she doesn't like writing about people raising kids, so.
Yeah, and that's probably why we didn't hear about how he was raised in the brothel.
Yeah, we're left to assume just a humongous swath of the lives of many of the characters in Outlander. You just have to deal with it, but.
And that's why we have these what ifs.
That's what we're here for. We're discovering stuff along the way ourselves.
Well, yeah, so that was it for me.
Me too.
Yeah, that was it for me though.
I
enjoyed
you.
This episode with you.
I can't believe how many funny moments there were, and I'm really surprised at that, and I am looking forward to some more, but I know it gets deeper and darker as the season goes on. So, I'm not looking forward to that.
Girl, just make yourself a drink. We'll find something to laugh about. I think it makes it easier. I mean, I don't think I would have shared the fact that I pissed all over myself, but I don't think I'm embarrassed by that anymore.
Hey, if gin makes you sin, then
whiskey makes you frisky.
It's going to be a really fun summer. Whiskey makes you frisky and
gin
makes you sin. And that might be the entire strategy behind Sam Heughan's business plan.
I'm telling you, it works. The man's a genius.
He is. And he knows what he's doing to us.
So yeah, that was the end of that episode. So can I talk about what we saw today?
Yeah.
Men in Kilts 2. When I tell you, I'm so excited.
I hate them. I've got that stupid song stuck in my head.
Men in Kilts, 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 Men in Kilts. God, they're so cute. What are you excited to see? Do you think they're going to follow the same?
Whatever the hell they're doing, where Sam is wearing that tank top and those red board shorts and carrying like a boogie board, that's what I'm excited to see.
I think they're going surfing. Yeah.
Fuck me.
I know this sounds crazy, but I'm excited to see inside of their camper van. I love the last one. And I felt like someone told me it was for sale with all the things inside of it. Or did I just make that up?
I think you can rent it with all the things inside of it.
You can rent it or something?
I think in Scotland, you could rent the same camper van that they used. I don't know if all the decorations were still inside it. This is going to be so hilarious and amazing.
I don't know much about New Zealand. I did have a high school friend that he met the love of his life, and he moved there, and he lived there for like 10 years. Wow. He just recently moved back to the States, and he said he absolutely would go back again if he could. But he said he absolutely loved it there. And I'm like, you know, I went to Australia. That's the closest I got. Maybe one of these days. But it looks beautiful, and I'm excited to read the new book.
All right. Well, next week will be our last season 6 episode. I don't know how we're going to cram that in, but we're going to have to make it work one way or another. Or we might have two episodes next week.
We're going to have to do a Speedy Gonzales.
Arriba, arriba. Andale, andale.
Because, I mean, we've only done one of season 6.
I know.
We're just doing one episode of season 6 and that's it.
No, there's only 8. So we could like cram 2 of them into one episode. All right. We'll figure it out and we'll let you know. And in the meantime,
we'll see you.
We'll see you. Everybody take care.
Bye, y'all. Bye.
Thank you all for listening. You can find us, follow and message us on Instagram at Outlander with Friends, and we love to hear from you. We're now available on all major podcast apps, and if you leave us a great rating, it helps more people find us. Listen next week for more TMI. Don't say we didn't warn you.